This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. I'm here with Connie Hammond. Many of the listeners of this show may know her as the editor of the Columbus Progressive Newsletter. But it's probably incorrect to say she's just the editor. She's probably the publisher as well, the way things work in the city of Columbus. Welcome to The Other Side of the News, Connie Hammond.
Thank you very much for asking me, Bob.
And I thought about you being on the show primarily because what is happening in the Middle East, Israeli attacks on Palestinian territory, and I recall that you actually took a visit to there, not to Gaza, but to other parts of Palestine and into the Middle East. What can you tell us about that trip?
Well, we went to a variety of places. I went there basically to attend a liberation theology conference by Sabil, which is a Palestinian Liberation Theology Center. Mm-hmm. And there's a Friends of Sabil North America, FASNA, and they had a pre-trip tour. So we visited various places in Israel, and particularly in Nazareth and in the Negev, where there are Bedouin tribes living. We visited with Bedouin tribes. We went to the West Bank, and a lot of the things that we saw in the West Bank kind of sets the context for things that are going on today. We didn't go to Gaza. Gaza, it's very difficult to go to Gaza. It's very restricted. Gaza has been pretty much sealed off. It's been under siege for decades, and Israel controls everything that goes in and out of Gaza, and it controls the borders and even the access to the sea, to the Mediterranean side of the country. So we didn't get to Gaza, but the things that we saw in the West Bank were the expansion of the Israeli settlements into the Palestinian territory. We saw the bypass roads that connect the settlements with Israel proper and Tel Aviv, so that that are accessed. These are roads that were built, and they can be accessed only by Israelis. They crisscross the whole West Bank, so that it makes it very difficult to travel from one town to another. We saw how the smaller villages like Atwani and Susia were being encroached on, or even larger towns are being encroached on by settlements, the house demolitions, people in East Jerusalem being forced out of their homes, and settlers given the access to those homes. It was really an eye-opener to see how the Palestinians have to live, and the checkpoints that are just a daily humiliation and make it very difficult for them to travel, to go to work, to go to school, sometimes taking them 2 hours to get in and out of to school, and sometimes giving them making it impossible for them to access, for farmers to access their fields, or for people to get to hospitals. It's a really difficult situation in the West Bank, and in Gaza it's probably even more severe. Even though Israel disengaged from the settlements in 2005, they still control the borders, the airspace, and the access to the sea.
So Israel essentially, some have argued, has created the world's largest open-air prison. Essentially, you can't leave Gaza without Israeli permission?
Correct. And at the same time, they're protected by the Iron Dome missile defense system, which tracks the you know, they complain that they have to, that no country would endure the missiles that are being sent from Gaza, but the United States has largely paid for the missile defense system, the Iron Dome, that tracks these missiles, and if they're going to end up in a populated area, they're intercepted. There have only been two civilian casualties on the Israeli side because of the missile strikes and the incursions. And when you see this kind of dissymmetry, I think the worldwide opinion is becoming very sympathetic with what's going on in Gaza. Last week there were probably close to 1,000 people downtown Columbus demonstrating to end the war in Gaza. There have been demonstrations in London. There have been anti-war demonstrations in Tel Aviv, which I think there's not a uniform opinion about this, but there's a lot of anti-war sentiment in the worldwide.
Well, one of the issues that's been raised repeatedly since it's part of the doctrine of just and unjust wars is proportionality. And you raised a few civilian casualties. Of course, the initial killing of, what was it, three Israeli teenagers. But on the other side, what's there been? 800 to 1,200 casualties in Gaza, and
yes,
that changes by the day. Does this meet any standard of justice to be taking this out on the civilian population of Gaza and the policies we'll talk to you about within Israel and the West Bank?
To my thinking, it violates all kinds of international law and conventions. And even if you look at previous incursions into Gaza, it seems like every 2 to 4 years, Israel finds some reason for there to be an incursion into Gaza. And if you look at the Goldstone report on that was prepared about the human rights violations that occurred during Operation Cast Lead, it's an enormous volume of work, and it violates all kinds of international conventions on the rights of civilians, especially civilians under occupation, which most people still consider Gaza to be an occupied territory.
So the occupying power has a whole set of obligations to the civilian population under, you know, customary international law, human rights law, and you're arguing that they're violating some of these. What would be some examples?
Well, for one thing, in the West Bank, when you occupy a country, it's against international law to insert a civilian population into that occupied territory. Mm-hmm. You're responsible under the Geneva Conventions, and I'm not an attorney, so you're responsible for everything. You're responsible for
clean water,
which is very lacking in Gaza right now.
Make sure there's enough food
for hospitals. There are no hospital beds available in Gaza right now. Three hospitals have been attacked, and there are no beds available for continued casualties.
Israel has hit three hospitals.
That's the latest that I
read. We know they hit a school that was under UN control, and of course, it was the famous killing, or infamous killing, of the four, fishermen children. And so, how do you see that? You were there. Is this intentional, or is it just callous disregard for the civilian population? Because the Israelis are going to say, "Oh, we target a building, we drop leaflets, we use a dummy bomb an hour ahead of time." How do you see that? Because there seems to be a disconnect from what the Israeli government is saying and what you're telling us, and what is not you just telling us, what is being widely reported.
Yeah, and you know they are making they are saying a lot about, you know, the precautions that they take. They call it knocking on the door, but actually it's not knocking on the door. It's knocking on the roof with a bomb, which is potentially dangerous in itself. And I think they say that the average time is 3 minutes, although the Israelis will say, well, we wish we had 3 minutes, because by the time the warning sirens go off in Israel or in Tel Aviv, we have less than that. So, it depends. It's a vicious cycle of violence. And you mentioned earlier about the three young men who were kidnapped near Hebron when they were hitchhiking. They were in an Israeli-controlled military zone, and this is a heinous crime. But it was a crime. It was not instigated by Hamas, and I can't believe that Israeli intelligence did not know that it was not instituted by Hamas. It was a heinous crime that the perpetrators should be found and punished for that.
As criminals.
As opposed
rather to
than punishing a whole civilian population.
Okay, and when you were in there, although there were other activities going on, the question of the Bedouins, the nomadic people, what was happening there? I know that Israel, and this isn't in Gaza, has come under heavy criticism for removing indigenous people, Bedouins, from their native land.
Yeah, they've lived in the Negev, ever since the time of when Jordan was in control, and they're told, well, you can live here, and then they're told you can live here, and they've been moved around. But Israel has displaced tens of thousands of them already. And back in November when I was there, there was talk of, maybe another 60, 70,000 more. And they even used this term, they want to concentrate them from, because they're semi-nomadic people, they want to concentrate them into towns, and they can, their complaint is when that happens, they can no longer, raise their livestock, do their farming, and sustain their lives. Yeah. There's no jobs in these cities. They don't want to be moved.
Sounds very similar to U.S. Native American policy.
It does.
Unfortunately, saying that, I'm thinking, didn't I hear that with Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, and just the fact, there were Jewish people in our group that were just horrified at the word concentrate, wanting to concentrate a population into a contained area. So they were horrified at that.
Now, how are the people of Israel? Are they going along with the tactics that their government is using? We often argue that the people aren't necessarily their government.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you raised that question, because I did read just recently this morning that in Tel Aviv there were thousands of people, and of course there were counter-protests, but there were thousands of people protesting the war in Gaza, and there were counter-protests. But I think that's encouraging to know that, the thinking within Israel isn't as uniform as maybe our press would like us to believe it is, or maybe as it is even here in the United States.
So what would you like to see happen? What is the peace solution you or any group you're affiliated with pushing for?
There are some people who are pushing for a two-state solution.
I'm one of them.
Some people think that it's already gone too far for a two-state solution.
Yeah, a secular democratic Israel, which, if you include the Palestinian territory, How would that look in terms of numbers?
It would look bad for Israel.
they
would not accept that. Yeah,
Palestinian.
The majority would
and not
would
all
be
Palestinians
Arab or Palestinian.
Are the same. You talked about meeting with Christian Palestinians?
Exactly. And, you know, they suffer, even inside Israel, they're discriminated against in a lot of ways, not just the Arab population. Well, they are Arabs. So it amazed me.
They're not Islamic. They're Christians.
Exactly. It amazed me when I came back to the United States after being with these Christians all this time that, you know, that some of the news media, can I say this?
Yeah.
Fox News was saying that the Christians were leaving because of the Arabs. They were not leaving because of the Arabs. They work with the Muslim Palestinians. So that was...
All right, let me take a quick break here. This is WCRS 98.3. 102.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Fitrakis. I'm in the studio with Connie Hammond, the editor and publisher of Columbus's Progressive Newsletter, the Columbus Progressive Newsletter, the source I use when I want to know what progressive activists are doing in Columbus, Ohio. Connie, recently, and when was that, Connie?
Back in November of 2013.
So in November 2013, went to Israel, went to the West Bank, and observed things there. So what were your takeaways from that visit?
Well, you know, I think that... It's a terribly difficult situation, and it's going to take both sides have to give some, and I think if there is going to be there needs to be a ceasefire, of course, but for a ceasefire, both sides have to give in, have to see that they've gained something, and then, you know, once there's a ceasefire, I'm hoping that they can get to some of what the root causes of the conflict are, and the root causes the occupation. And the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, it's illegal, and it's immoral, and it's the United States could end it, I believe, in a minute if instead of just asking for a ceasefire, instead of just our president asking Israel to stop expansion into East Jerusalem, if they would say, you know, these are suggestions, but United States aid is contingent on you following these suggestions. And I think they could end it immediately.
So what's going on in East Jerusalem?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, but we visited one area in particular called Sheikh Jarrah. And this gentleman who was with one of the Scandinavian international organizations took us on this side trip. And we saw actually houses in this neighborhood. And this is not the only neighborhood where they're actually kicking Palestinian families out of their homes, putting them out on the street.
Well, how do they do that? Do they take them to court, or they just say...
Well,
get the hell out.
They just, I'm not sure, but I think they just evict them. And then, you know, the people in this neighborhood, while we were there, some people came to talk to us, and they are trying to fight this through the courts. And they are willing to fight it to the Israeli Supreme Court. They did get a stay, I believe, in one instance. But, you know, once these people have been kicked out, they've got to have some place to go. There was another family where they had forced them to live in the back of the house, and they moved these young Israeli men into the front of the house, and they put the flag of Israel and the Star of David on the door, and they just take it over. And
so East Jerusalem, traditionally Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, that's where the displacement's taking place.
Right, and a lot of these people were displaced from West Jerusalem during the 48 war. And then you have Greater Jerusalem, which includes areas where they have built enterprise zones. They've created enterprise zones.
Well, what's an enterprise zone? Is this some idea from the Reagan years?
Well, yeah, it's like where they invite businesses to come in. They give them...
These are Israeli businesses?
And international businesses. Businesses we saw... Kind of like free trade zones? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up, Bob, because it is. It's like a free trade zone. And SodaStream factory is there. That is one of the corporations that is operating illegally on land that's been usurped by Israel in the West Bank. And this is one of the things that we're trying to call for a boycott of SodaStream and their products.
And what are some of their products?
They make this... Supposedly this environmentally good product, which I'm sure it is, where you can make your own sodas.
Okay.
And flavored sodas. And there are other products that are made on the West Bank and things that are produced actually by Israeli companies in the West Bank that we're calling to boycott. But mainly the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is trying to target companies like Caterpillar and Hewlett-Packard.
Is Caterpillar on the West Bank in the free enterprise zone?
They actually make custom Caterpillar bulldozers for destroying Palestinian homes.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why...
Customized, you absolutely have to destroy a Palestinian home.
Right, right. And they're reinforced. They're huge Caterpillar bulldozers. And then Hewlett-Packard, which is developing technology to scan...
any American standing in the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like Rachel Corrie, who not only did they run over this young peace activist, but they backed up and ran over her again twice. And there's never been any just... I think the operator was acquitted.
They were testing the traction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's customized Caterpillar.
Yeah.
So that's something the listeners need to contemplate.
Yeah.
Who else did you mention? Hewlett-Packard?
Yes, and Motorola. Because Hewlett-Packard in particularly is developing types of racial profiling technology that they can use at checkpoints. And I think this could have expanded uses.
The problem is, in part, the Arab and Israeli people, if we know our Old Testament, are actually related.
Exactly. We're blood brothers. We're all blood brothers.
You just can't use the American crude technique of stop the blacks.
Yeah.
So they're more sophisticated racial profiling.
It must be.
The technology
is beyond anything I could understand, but I'm sure it could be used at the borders here.
Mouth. We're going to go back to the cruiser and find out which gene code you have.
Oh. I have no idea.
I'm just envisioning worst case scenario. But that's real interesting.
So those are basically the companies that like the Presbyterian Church just recently voted to divest from some of the major companies that are profiting from the occupation, because it is illegal and it's causing a lot of suffering and it's causing suffering on both sides. It's not that we are anti-Israel. I think peace is in the interest of everybody in the world, including the people of Israel.
Well, what percent of Palestine is now occupied? Well, and whether we're using a 67 standard or a 48 standard, do we have any idea?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could. We talked to Jeff Halpern, and even within the area that's considered occupied Palestine, there is an Area A, which is controlled by the Palestinian Authority mm-hmm. under their civil and military control.
Right.
There's an Area B, which is under Israeli military control.
Mm-hmm.
And military occupied Palestine. There's Area C, which is part of Palestine, which is totally under Israeli military jurisdiction. So actually, I think Palestine is only 22% of the Palestine.
Right.
I think it is only 22% under actual Palestinian control.
And this would be the 48 territory?
Of the...
Or the 67
That would be of the area that was taken over in 1967.
Oh, okay.
So actually, they'd already lost.
Because they got a much better split back in 1948 when Israel refused to recognize that dividing line.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound like there's a whole lot left for the Palestinian Authority to administer its authority over. And, I mean, Gaza, isn't it safe to consider all of Gaza occupied?
Oh, I think so. Although Israel would say it's not occupying Gaza because they pulled out the settlements, it still controls everything. And the Oslo Accords actually control every aspect of development in the whole West Bank, including, you know, cell phones and in all the different, because they'll often blame Palestine, like, you know, why aren't you developing your economy and so forth, but they have control over all the commerce within the West Bank and every aspect of their development.
Now, you made this point prior to the show, I recall reading it as well in mainstream newspapers. The Israeli government controls the calorie count going into Gaza.
Yeah, they do. They've calculated what you need, and that's how much they will allow in terms of water and food. They control everything that crosses the borders.
Mm-hmm. So the population,
and that's why people tunnel.
Why are they building tunnels? Well, because you've closed the air, the seaport, and the border. So we have to tunnel.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be dependent on a country that we were at war with for how much I could eat every day. But
so what would you tell our listeners? What can people do at this moment in history to help bring about peace in the Middle East?
Well, right now, there are a couple of things. This Friday, there's going to be a Gaza support rally, August 1st, in downtown Columbus. From 4 to 6 on Friday. I should have some more information soon on that, but the website that I would post that to would be columbuspeacenetwork.org. And so if you don't get my newsletter, then I will have whatever I can find about that posted on that website. But we're also writing to our congresspeople, making phone calls, we're signing petitions, asking for a ceasefire, but we're also trying to get groups to support divestment. And like the churches and other, you know, like retirement funds to divest from companies that do business. So if you know of OSU, Committee for Justice in Palestine, has a BDS campaign,
mm-hmm.
and they also have a website. It's the Committee for Justice in Palestine and BDS. If you Google that, I'm sure you can get to their website. And
And again, make sure you check out the Columbus Progressive newsletter. We're speaking to Connie Hammond. We've got a few minutes here to wrap up. What else would you like to tell our listeners?
Well, just that, you know, that war is the worst thing that can happen. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for either side, no matter if you're on the winning side or the losing side. There just is nothing to be gained. And I don't see any reason for not supporting peace. I think we have to remember that we can't look at the other as an enemy. We have to look at them as a potential as a potential friend and ally, and just refuse to be enemies with anyone.
All right, Connie Hammond, the editor, publisher of the Columbus Progressive Newsletter. And once again, when's that rally on August 1st?
It's from 4 to 6 this Friday. It'll be downtown. And so I imagine it'll be around the State House on the sidewalk, but I should have more details soon. And I know we're putting, the Committee for Justice in Palestine is putting together some information on a petition, so we'll be getting that information out soon.
All right. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Dr. Bob Fitrakis signing off and thanking Connie Hammond for being our guest.
Thank you, Bob, for asking us.